You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm your host, Jocelyn Swigger, and last summer I took time off practicing to have a baby. Maybe you can hear him. And now I'm trying to get my brain and my chops back in shape by learning the Chopin etudes. So this is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's July 28th, and we're going to just see how this goes. I have Ben with me, and he may sing along or make some noise or play with the pedals or play the piano. So this will, it's going to be a little experiment. We'll just see how it goes. If you're looking for one of these podcasts to skip, this might be the one. okay, so I wanted to tell you just a couple of things. I'm not going to play a whole lot for you today because I'm in the middle of this kind of, I don't know whether to call it a desert or an oasis. Let's call it a desert of just not practicing, which is why I'm doing this podcast on Thursday instead of the weekend. I went to New York last week, and I'm going to tell you a little story about that in a minute. But it was a few days of not practicing, and I'm about to go to Seattle this weekend and not practice. So next week I'll be back on Tuesday night, and then starting on Wednesday I will hopefully be in some sort of regular routine, or at least I'm going to try and get myself back into that. And we'll just hopefully be practicing again. One thing I have to say is that I'm feeling kind of proud of myself that I'm not feeling guilty about not practicing these 2 weeks. Which might sound a little bit silly, but, you know, guilt can get you to practice. Like, guilt is actually, yeah, yes, there's Ben. Guilt can be really good to get you to work, but it also can sometimes make the work itself a little joyless. So I'm happy that I've been able to let guilt go of this couple of weeks of not practicing. Anyway, it means that I don't have a lot of playing to do for you. I'm going to play you a little bit of my simplified version of 25 number 2. I did want to tell you that coming back to the piano, and really it's been like 10 minutes a day of practice because I'm on my own with Ben this week. And you'll see, I think, pretty quickly why it doesn't work, because he's probably going to come and join in and play when I start playing. But sort of being away from the piano but kind of thinking about the piano and then coming back and just having a few minutes, in some ways I feel like it has solidified some of these rotation movements that I've been so focused on. So I think that's good. I mean, I'm playing kind of slowly, but the motions feel kind of more ingrained than they do, and we'll see if I still feel that way when I come back and practicing normally. Okay, so I have a small boy standing up holding onto my legs, and we're going to see how this goes. I'm going to do this mostly from memory and kind of under tempo, and this left hand simplified. Okay, so some of those glitches were Ben's fault, and some of them were just my fault. I'm going to play that for you next week. I will have had about 4 days back practicing, so I'll play that for you next week. Same version, a little bit faster. And hello, Ben. And hopefully that will work better. Okay, so that's still kind of the main one. I wanted to tell you about a couple of non-Chopin pieces. So you might recall a couple weeks ago that I decided I needed to do a little bit of left-hand boot camp. And I looked through and I found some studies that are just left hand, that aren't Chopin. And actually, I thought it might be kind of interesting for you to hear these a little bit, just because, and there's Ben playing, you can see how my practice has been this week, because it really, I think, shows how amazing these Chopin etudes are, as compositions when you think that this is what studies were before Chopin. So here's a cute little study in C major, The People's Key, by Gurlitt. So we'll see how this goes. Again, some of the glitches are my fault and some of them are Ben's, but let's just say they're all Ben's, actually. He's now sitting under the pedal. This is going to be my last like major report that I give to you of what's going on, but he's sitting on my foot and playing with the pedals. So anyway, so that's, I mean, you can hear that that's kind of this dorky little piece, right? Like this little moment is nice. But other than that, it's just silly. And so when you compare that to these, you know, here's Chopin's C major etude, right? You know, I mean, it's just totally a different world. Anyway, so that's kind of cool, but a fun little thing. Here's another one that I actually like more. This is by Behrens, who's a composer that I don't know at all. So this is kind of cute. Again, left-hand kind of stuff. So, you know, kind of silly. Again, totally shows that Chopin is amazing compared to what came before. So this these little chromatic moments are kind of nice. And speaking of little things that are not Chopin that work on some of these rotation things that I need to work on, I just picked up the part for The Carnival of the Animals by Camille Saint-Saëns, which is a piece I really like. This is for two pianos and small chamber orchestra, which makes it sound like it's a concerto. It's totally not. It's chamber music. So the pianos are kind of equal parts with the rest of the pieces. But there's a couple of movements that exactly work on what I'm going to have to work on, specifically the third one, which is very fast animals. Hémionies. My French is just not functional today, so we're just going to call it that. So this is, it's presto furioso, so furiously fast, but it does this. I'm going to sort of make it up. This is like a perfect rotation exercise. But obviously I'm going to have to practice it. And then it turns around a little bit and there's a small boy hindering me. Anyway, I won't make you listen to me muddle my way through that. I will play that for you actually as we get closer to the concert, which is at the end of September. So this is going to be one of those things that I'm going to just want to look at. It's just two pages. So that's going to be a couple pages I need to practice a lot, but then should be fine. Then there are a couple of other things in here that are nice that I'll be looking at. But one thing I want to tell you that I think is really funny. So this is Carnival of the Animals, right? So it starts out with you know, the Royal March of the Lion, and we have, there's a swan, which is really beautiful. We have chickens. We have kangaroos. There's an elephant. There's an aquarium. You get the idea. But so then in the middle of this piece, there's pianists. And it says the performers should imitate the playing of a beginner and with awkwardness. So this is pianist. I'm going to play this for you. It's actually both pianos doing this at the same time. So it's kind of hellish to hear, but it's quite funny. And of course, pianist as one of the animals in the zoo is possibly funny too. So it goes like this. And people usually speed it up a little bit, which I'm going to do now because it's pretty boring. Ooh, I need to practice my E flat scale. And then this is double forte, so it's like the pianists are really mad. And now Ben's about to help. And then it goes to the next thing. And now Ben is playing. Anyway, so that's going to be kind of fun to work on. I won't torture you with making you hear the pianist's version alone again, but I'm sort of tickled by that. So this will be a fun thing to do. And I think it'll be fun to play a piece that is a chamber piece with a small orchestra instead of just being by myself all the damn time. So that's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to that. Okay, that is about all of the playing that I have for you today, but I wanted to tell you a little story about when I was in New York. So I don't know if you can hear that my piano is a little bit clunky in moments. I think it has a really beautiful core sound, but it's kind of like a car that needs a lot of work. And I've decided that I'm going to have it rebuilt, actually, which is a pretty big decision. It's from 1920. It's a Steinway, a 1920M, medium size. And my mother died a year ago and left me a little bit of money, and I've decided to use some of that to have this piano rebuilt, which I know she would really, really, really love. I know she would be really thrilled about that. And actually, when we go to Seattle this weekend, it's going to be partly to scatter her ashes, so I'm certainly thinking about her a lot this week. But anyway, so I've made this decision to have my piano rebuilt. What's the matter, Ben? Can you hang out just one more minute? You are fine. Look at that smile. You can hang out. Anyway, so I was in New York last week visiting friends, and I arranged to go to the Steinway factory in Astoria and take a little tour to meet with the guy who's the head of the rebuilding there. And I did that, and it was very nice. But while I was driving there, I had kind of an interesting moving experience. So I was driving with Ben in his little car seat, and I had not been to Astoria since I lived there. Well, let me tell you about when I lived there. So I graduated from Oberlin in 1995 and just up and moved to New York. I didn't have a job. I did have a roommate whom I met at Chautauqua, the summer camp that summer. Didn't know him very well. Just ended up with a room in an apartment in Astoria and moved to New York. And I basically had no friends and no nothing. I went from basically being in college where you have this wonderful support group all the time and where I was surrounded by, you know, interesting, intelligent people that I loved who gave a damn about what I said so I could have a conversation at any moment. That wasn't a luxury at all. And I went to being in this huge place where nobody cared about me and not having anybody that I could particularly talk to. Just because, you know, eventually a million of my friends moved to New York, and when I lived there again after graduate school, it was a completely different experience. But that first year, I felt like I was sort of, it was like I moved to New York and a bunch of my other friends moved to Boston, and I just didn't have a support network. And, you know, I telemarketed at Carnegie Hall, and I was really young and scared and not at all sure of what my future was going to be, very much wanting to be a wonderful pianist, but not really feeling like I knew how to make that happen, and desperately lonely. And Ben is now banging on the microphone stand. That's okay. I'm just talking. He can bang on the stand. Anyway, so I was desperately lonely and kind of hungry, and I wasn't actually that miserable. It was really exciting to be in New York, and I loved being there. And by the end of the year, I had made some friends and had found some reasonable work and was feeling like maybe I was sort of on my way to being able to play well, but it took going to graduate school, which is what I did right after that. Anyway, so I had this 1 year, and I lived in Astoria for just a few months before I left and then went to apartment sit, and I moved a lot that year. Anyway, point is, I hadn't been back to Astoria since I lived there, and I lived there at sort of the most lonely and desperate and creatively scared and certainly professionally scared time of my life. And it was really moving to come back with my baby in the car and tenure at a job that I love and be coming back to go to the Steinway factory to tour it because my piano that I own is going to get rebuilt there. That was pretty amazing. I got a little weepy when I sort of thought about that. Just because I think I wouldn't have been able to imagine that I would have... I mean, I don't think I would have been able to imagine even owning a car at that point. I was so broke. So it was just kind of nice to realize that less than 20 years later, in a very, very real sense, all of my dreams have come true. And I think that was an important thing for me to realize. And I was talking about it with a friend of mine, and I was talking about how I've been feeling, and if you've been listening to this podcast, I think you know, that I've been feeling sort of mediocre, partly because these etudes are hard. But I think I've also been comparing myself to some of my peers who are, in a different lane than I am, kind of in the fast lane. I went to college with Jeremy Denk, for example, who's like this huge, huge, huge piano star and also a really sweetheart of a guy and a brilliant writer and wonderful player. Anyway, the point is that comparing myself to Jeremy Denk is only going to lead to sorrow. But comparing myself to myself can actually be sort of helpful. So it was a nice realization, even though I was in the middle of this couple of weeks where I'm just not practicing very much, that in the big picture, I feel like I'm kind of on track, which is nice. And even though these etudes are so difficult and making me feel so humble, just to sound like Rupert Murdoch for a minute, that I think it just was nice to sort of feel like I'm on track. Anyway, so I hope that you are feeling like you're on track. And if you've made it through this particular podcast, which, like I said, is probably the one to skip if you were going to skip one, I'd love to know that you're actually listening. You know, I sort of feel like I have twos of listeners, and that may be true, or maybe just two. It might be singular. And that's okay. Like, the worst case scenario with this podcast is that it gets me to practice and makes me accountable to myself and my practicing. And I think it's doing that for the most part. But if you're listening and if you like this, or if there are things that you think I could improve about the podcast, I'd really, really love your feedback. You can write me a review on iTunes, which would be grand. Or you can go to my website, which I think I tell you about in the playout, but it's playitagainswig.com. So I think that is just about it for this week. Thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Play It Again Swig is produced in my living room. You can leave comments or questions, which I would love, and find out more at playitagainswig.com.